the Bare Bones Dinosaur Edutainment Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Marshall.
And I'm your host, David Lindley. And this is the ultimate episode
ultimate.
Of the Dinosaurs. And we're doing a topic that I knew would be difficult. And then I got to the end of writing my notes and I was like, wow, that's a lot of notes. And then I was like, can I take some of these notes out? And then I thought to myself, nah, that's fine. Just leave them all in.
Let's do it fast. Oh, you're just going to talk really fast? Okay. I'm here for it. Okay, so no banter. Just go.
So we're covering today how dinosaurs breathe. Actually, before we get to that, let's take a detour before we even start today. Because they named a new dinosaur.
Michaela, oh.
And they do that fairly frequently.
Sure.
But do you know what they called this one? They called it Stegosaurus.
Why?
Because they are evil and bad people. Why, when Stegosaurus and Stegosaurus already exist, would you name something Stegosaurus, which means roofed something? I don't even really know what the etymology is.
So my first thought is that paleontologists are not very creative.
Mm-hmm.
My second thought is that they're like, oh, this will make it easier for people because the names are so
I stick with my interpretation that these are bad, like fundamentally irredeemable people.
Yeah.
And everyone who reviewed this paper and said, yeah, that name is fine, is also like fairly irredeemable.
That's actually an interesting question. Do these papers get rejected on the basis of a name is bad? And that's like the only reason the paper is being rejected.
I mean, we covered this a long while ago, but like if you violate ICZN rules, probably people are going to catch that in the review stage and
yes.
throw your paper back. Maybe they don't. And eventually, like, your published paper has to be either retracted or amended because the ICZN, the naming people, are like, nope, not good. You can't have it.
But there's a difference between the name being objectively not allowed and someone just saying, this name sucks, you know?
I would love to see, yeah, that be the reason to reject a paper. And like, it's fully allowed. It's just bad.
Yeah,
and
sorry.
They should rethink their choices.
You need a better name. Try something cooler next time.
All right. So the actual thing that we're talking about is dinosaur breathing, which has been the source of some confusion for me. And I think I've traced this back to like really how deep the confusion runs.
Okay.
And we'll get into that a bit. Because maybe I didn't really understand the respiratory system very well.
Like the human respiratory system?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's say any respiratory system, including humans and mammals. Dinosaurs had unidirectional breathing. And here I'm saying dinosaurs a lot. A lot of this is directly observed in birds and then has been applied to dinosaurs.
Okay.
And we'll talk a little bit about that, like about whether or not that's valid at the end. But generally, yes, that's fine.
That was actually going to be one of my questions is this how birds breathe? And is that where this is coming from? Because otherwise, it seems like a crazy thing to just make up.
Right, yeah. We know a lot about how dinosaurs breathed because we can observe how birds breathe.
Right.
And then sort of work backwards from there and say, okay, is that plausible for all dinosaurs as well? So currently, yes, we think that all dinosaurs breathe the same way that birds do. And we'll talk briefly about that at the end as well. So birds and dinosaurs have a form of breathing called unidirectional breathing, one direction breathing, which I think the most fun interpretation of is that they breathe in through their nose and out through their butts.
I was going to joke that they just breathe in forever.
Also good. Neither technically accurate, I'll say. Actually, you called it last time because you were like, are there valves involved? And yeah, it's heavily
I don't
involved,
see how else it could work.
Valves.
Yeah, like that's really the only option, right? That's how you make things go one way with valves.
Yeah, basically. Like there are tons of human, like valves in the human body, right? And like various
heart valves.
I want to call them sphincters, I guess.
Yeah. Oh.
Heart valves. But just like things that can close up so that you don't get things flowing the wrong way.
Right.
Because a lot of stuff in bodies flows ideally in one direction. But when we talk about unidirectional breathing, like one direction, we're talking about the things that are past the main breathing tube. So like, yes, there's one breathing tube and breath goes in that and out of that in dinosaurs. But then once you get past that, there is this like closed loop where it goes in and around and then back out. So that's what we mean by unidirectional. And let's start addressing some of like maybe my misconceptions about how humans breathe. Because until like last night, I had a very tenuous grasp on how we breathe.
What did you think?
Let's start with the lungs, shall we? Mm-hmm. So we have one trachea or breathing tube, right?
Yeah.
That's the main tube that breath goes in and out of. So far, so good. I was
on board with that. Air tube, it
diverges into two bronchi.
Yeah.
These are the things that go to each of your lungs. And up until here, I'm like fully on board. I'm like, yep, that's how things work. Everyone knows that. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I then thought that the bronchi pushed air into the large sacs that are our lungs. Mm. And like, that's not technically wrong, but... So I know that we have a bunch of alveoli, which hang out in the lungs to extract oxygen. I sort of thought that the air would be brought into the lungs and like would hang out swirling around. Like picture you've got a bunch of broccoli and that is your alveoli, right?
Okay, yeah.
Because I knew that there was like a central tube and then they branched off in this like broccoli-esque sort of formation.
Sure.
I thought humans breathed by like blowing a fan over the top of a cluster of broccoli.
Oh, interesting.
When what's actually happening is the air is going down the main stalk of the broccoli out into all of the like separate branches.
Yeah.
And then there are the little bulbs at the end of the broccoli and those are our alveoli. And that's where like the oxygen exchange happens. So I just had it completely backwards and I don't really know where I thought the alveoli connected to, because they connect to the bronchi, these two like tubes that come off the trachea. I just didn't really think about that. And like, it always feels like lungs are these sacks of air. And I knew also that, there's a lot of surface area in the lungs for us to like absorb oxygen. I thought it was just the air is flowing around the top of the broccoli. Not true.
Interesting. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard anyone else say that. So that's exciting for me. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not into biology much and I haven't really looked how this stuff works.
And I mean like my understanding was like, you know, I thought that it was more of like a webby thing that it went to the ends of, but that's about where my knowledge ended as well. And I did take like grade 11 biology, so maybe that's where I learned that.
La la. I think most of this was grade school and I just like, I really got the wrong impression.
And then,
school.
This is the thing. Once you like kind of internalize that, then if you don't ever see anything that gives you, a different idea, you're just like, this is what it is. And you're not going to go looking into it if that's not your thing.
Right? Like, I really just haven't thought about it after internalizing it in grade school and living with that impression.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's lungs. I was also wrong about the diaphragm.
All right.
I somehow had it in my head that the diaphragm was like an organ.
Oh.
And I feel so stupid saying a lot of this, but like, this is... I don't know. I don't feel like this is a bad thing to say. I feel like, yes, these are misconceptions that you can have, and I certainly had them.
Honestly, it sounds like your grade school science teacher was like telling you some stuff that was not true.
I don't think that's true.
No?
I think I just didn't really question what a diaphragm was.
And just went.
And I'm pretty sure like music teachers have tried to explain to me what a diaphragm is. Because a diaphragm or your diaphragm is like this sheet of muscle, right? Mm-hmm. That separates your breathy bits from your like stomachy bits.
And it just.
And then.
The muscle itself expands and contracts or like. Pushes and pulls.
So when it tightens, right, that pulls your lungs down, that creates negative pressure, that like expands them, that brings air into your body. And then when your diaphragm loosens, that's when the air comes back out.
Yeah.
Because all of that's relaxing. There's some sort, there's a bit of elasticity to all of this, right? And that's how that works. So that's how diaphragms work. They're this sheet of muscle. They are very like separatory in your body where like, I didn't really think of it as like all of your guts are down here and they're separated by a little sheet. Like, that didn't really... Because I thought a diaphragm was just, like, an organ that was hanging out and, like, expanding and contracting somehow.
But, like...
Makes sense that it's a muscle.
Yeah, and, I mean, it would have still used muscles to do that if it was, in fact, how it worked. But, again, if you... I mean, yeah, you don't really have a reason to think, like, how's my diaphragm doing? Yeah.
It's not something I've thought about a lot. Anyway, so dinosaurs breathed wildly differently to this. Mm-hmm. And that is bonkers to me. Like, we're all tetrapods here, you know? We have the same basic spinal cord and then, like, four dangly bits coming off of that, which are our limbs. And, like, dinosaurs did wacky things with their hands. But, like, a dinosaur's hands are remarkably similar to a human's hands at the skeletal level. They have more knuckles on their hands because they have more phalanges on their fingers. And that's kind of wacky and weird. But, like, at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, there's the one bone for your humerus and then your radius and your ulna. They're two bones.
Yeah.
And then you've got just a mess of wrist bones. And then you've got your, like, metacarpals and carpals.
Yeah, and, like, their hands would kind of close the same way that ours do.
Right?
Yeah.
Like... This all seems very inelastic evolutionarily. Like, we don't mess with this sort of thing. And I thought lungs were more conservative than that. I thought, like, once a creature figures out how to breathe, not going to mess around with that, right? Like, don't you just sort of inherit that and, like, try to make some small modifications? No, you make crazy modifications to it, apparently.
Yeah, I just, because I am a person that breathes like a person breathes, I can't even, like, wrap my head really around the idea of this unidirectional, like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
And let's try to make it make a little bit of sense. So, as I said, our lungs are like broccoli, where we're pushing air into the main stalk and that goes through all the branches. And then all of those branches terminate in a little alveolus, I think is the singular for it. Little sac at the end. And then that's where all the, like, gas exchange happens. That's where we extract oxygen from the air and it gets into our bloodstream. For dinosaurs, they still have the little tube. So, like, they still have one trachea that splits into two bronchi, and those both split into, like, smaller bronchioles and then even smaller things. But where ours end in these alveoli, theirs just continue going. Their lungs are a series of tubes that loops around, basically. Except it's not even their lungs. Like, all of the gas exchange is happening in these special, like, these actual lung organs. And then there's all this other stuff to do with their respiratory system that we just don't have.
Yeah.
Because they've got these systems of air sacs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, okay. So if I'm something with, like, a really long neck, where is this, like, splitting happening? Like, at the top of the neck, or, like at the bottom of the neck?
No, it happens very close to the lungs. So the first split to go to the bronchi, actually, it might. So I've seen the inside of an ostrich's throat recently in one of my dinosaur textbooks. And I think you can see, it might be the trachea and, like, the digestive tract that I'm seeing at the same time. But there was a split visible there. As far as I know, the two bronchi split off quite close to the lungs generally. So the entire sauropod neck would just be this one big tube or maybe two big tubes, one for eating and one for breathing.
Right.
That sort of run parallel.
Yeah, and I guess when are they breathing in and when are they breathing out? Because, like, the air still has to leave at some point, doesn't it?
Yes. So, and this is actually an interesting thing to do with what's known as tracheal dead space.
Okay.
Because, yes, we've got this giant hose. And, like, if humans tried to breathe through a garden hose, we would suffocate.
Yeah.
Because, and actually, why would we suffocate, Michaela?
I mean, I just don't think we could get enough air that way. Like, we don't have the capacity to, like, suck that much air. Because our lungs can only, but they have so much more space.
They've got a lot more space because of all of these air sacs that are in their body. And they can push all of that so they can like open up a lot more and then push a lot more through, which is how they don't suffocate with their garden hose necks. although part of it is also the fact that tracheal dead space is mostly a problem for humans. So when we breathe in, we take in some air from the outside, and then all of that is like going into our lungs, right? But think about the air that's at the very bottom of your lungs. And it's not actually technically at the bottom, but like the furthest reaches.
Yeah.
We try to press all of that out on the exhale. We get as much out as we can. But we still have our entire trachea, the breathing tube, which is full of air. You can't like flatten that. You can't get all of the air out. So then the first air that we breathe in is this dead, stale air. We've already gotten most of the oxygen out of it. And that's a problem. While we're resting or taking shallow breaths, up to a third of the air that we take in a breath is already used. It's been in our body since the last time we inhaled.
Interesting. I mean, that makes sense. We need a better system. That's what I'm hearing.
We do. Birds get so much more oxygen out of their air because of how their lungs are set up. So I think it's time to like talk about what happens to a packet of air. So like I breathe in an oxygen molecule, right? Where does that go? Because in humans, that we breathe that in and it goes into our lungs, and then we breathe it out and it comes back out. In birds and in dinosaurs, they breathe in this oxygen and most of it actually bypasses the lungs. And it goes into, imagine in your belly, you've got an air sac. It goes into that, the like bottommost or rearmost air sac first. So that's your first inhale, is oxygen from the outside world into your stomach air sac. The exhale takes that oxygen and pushes it into the lungs. Now it's just sort of hanging out in the lungs because of the valves. They redirected it from where it just not gone out the trachea. The next inhale takes the air that was in the lungs and brings it into like your shoulder blade region air sacs. So these are the like foremost or topmost ones. So it's just spent an entire like exhalation in the lungs hanging out. And then it's being pulled through. You're just getting so much oxygen out of it as it's moving through, right? So now the second inhalation has brought it into your like shoulder blade sort of region. And then as you exhale again, it goes from those foremost air sacs out the trachea and out. So a packet of oxygen is in there for 2 cycles.
Right. And then you're still inhaling and exhaling. So you don't have the problem of like the new air coming in and the old air going out. Cause yeah, at that stage, in the next stage, there's still like inhale, exhale. It's just that the air is going on a bit more of a journey before it's the exhale air. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, the dinosaurs and birds, like mass for mass or volume for volume, just generally have more air space in them. Not lung space necessarily, because their lungs don't actually like expand and contract the same way ours do. We've got this as like one function where the lungs both do the gas exchange and they get bigger and smaller to blow air through us.
Right.
In birds, the lungs are just for gas exchange. And then it's these air sacs which are contracting and expanding. And those are what is driving air through the body. And that basically takes care of the diaphragm side of that too, because birds don't have diaphragms in the same way, because there's no need to like, you can't just expand one air sac
one spot.
And have this work.
Yeah.
You have to expand in a number of spots. So birds are actually really highly specialized in like their ribs play a part in this. And there's some sort of like pendulum like motion in their ribs, which is wacky. Right. But like they lack the traditional diaphragm the same way we do. Crocodiles actually have a more diaphragm-like setup. It's described as a pump, which I kind of hate. But it really does like push their guts forwards and backwards as they're breathing, which is so weird. Why? How are we innovating this much in how we breathe? Isn't that a dangerous place to make changes?
Yeah, when like so many of the other things, like you were saying, are so similar. Everything else is
so
like,
similar.
This is, like, you know, we got a face. Crocodiles got a face. Great.
We've got hearts. Crocodiles have hearts in much the same way we do, I think.
I mean, cows have multiple stomachs.
But their stomach, like multiple stomachs there is just, they've got like some restrictions in the same, in one stomach like we do. Like I've looked into this a little bit because I thought that was interesting. And like technically, yes.
But like not but, like, in the also... way where like there's really like four separate stomachs or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Huh. Why lungs? Why of all the things? Yeah.
Okay. So that's most of how birds breathe. Do you like understand the yeah. passage of a packet of air through the yes. body then?
It makes and way more sense to me.
It's very different then. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then I was thinking, okay, I know about bird bones, right? Like, oh, don't touch me, my bones. they're so light, right?
So good.
From 30 Rock.
Oh, yeah. My bones.
my bones. But, right. Dinosaurs and all birds have these air sacs in their bones that make the bones bigger and not technically less dense, although like we can talk about it as though it's less dense. So they can be lighter and they can save on mass. And I was like, okay, but I've just learned that the air sacs are how we like push air through the body. How are these like invasions of the bones where we've got air sacs in the bones, how are those working? Because you are they contracting and expanding their
sounds
bones with
dangerous
breath?
Or yeah.
Sounds terrible.
Sounds like a bad That's idea. Not,
turns out, no. The answer is just like they are not really used for respiration. They are mostly structural in nature. And like there's a little bit of stuff for like humidity control and temperature control. This is one where actually thermoregulation is a possibility.
Oh, I love it. When it's like, no, for real this time, guys, thermoregulation.
Again, I would say it's probably secondary, though. Like, yeah. The biggest thing is your bones are now lighter and you can be much bigger because of that.
Yeah.
So that's the coolest thing about those. All dinosaurs did have air sacs through the head and neck region.
Right.
But Ornithischians didn't really seem to have gone any further than that. They were okay. And a lot of Ornithischians then went like quadrupedal. So they didn't need so much of the weight saving. Like a Triceratops doesn't care if it's a few pounds lighter.
It
doesn't give a hoot. But sauropods and theropods both were interested in getting significantly lighter so that they could get bigger. And that's where you see more of these like skeletal air sacs cropping up. Still mostly in the spine. So like in the vertebrae of the main trunk of the body. And then a little bit in the limbs. I kind of thought it was just like equal opportunity air sacs, and it's really not. The air sacs are not uniformly distributed through the body at all, and I don't think anyone had air sacs like in their tail, for instance, because that's just getting your lungs involved in your tail, which seems like a bad plan.
Yeah, I mean, neck makes sense to me. Like, if I'm a big leafy boy with a very long neck, I want that neck to be as light as possible because I have to hold that darn thing up all day, right?
And your head. Yeah, you really want to save weight on the head.
Oh, just imagining a sauropod with like an overly large head and it's so silly looking.
It's so poorly balanced. It's not good engineering. Yeah. No. So that's most of what I have to say. This isn't like settled necessarily. And like the birds thing is quite settled. Birds, okay. But birds are not representative of all dinosaurs. And even most theropods, even like very bird-like theropods like Cynosauropteryx, didn't have the same specialized rib structure that modern birds do. And for a while, like my 2004 dinosaur textbook says that it's an unsupported inference to make that dinosaurs would have breathed the same as birds do because of their different rib setup. Now, more modern research, and especially a lot of research by Brocklehurst and I believe his PhD student Schachner, although I'm not actually sure of what their relationship is. They've co-authored a few papers. They are very certain that dinosaurs breathe the same way that birds do. So I'm actually pretty trusting of that. They've got a lot of papers out that seem to be well thought through, well researched. So I'm happy to say that. But it does still leave some mysteries because pterosaurs have a different rib setup to any other dinosaur.
Oh, dear.
And like, how did they breed? They've still got like these air sac systems. If they had a more crocodilian like pump system, then that implies that their innards are like rocking back and forth as they breathe, which sounds like a bad strategy if you want to, you know, fly and balanced.
Maybe it helps them digest things really fast, just rocking that food around. I mean, yeah,
you're sloshing it all over the place. It sounds like a great plan.
Gross.
But really, I think like the most modern research I've seen is just like, yep, further research would be good.
Someone look into this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that is how dinosaurs did. That is how they breathed. And I finally feel like I actually kind of understand that and can like explain it to people. Because for a long time, I heard unidirectional lung and I was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, and
where's the broccoli?
Yeah, and you're just like, what? Now that makes sense to me because I'm a person with two directional lungs.
Yeah,
and so it makes it very difficult to, put yourself in that dinosaur's shoes.
I think why lungs? Why was that what they just change? Now I'm kind of interested, like, did dinosaurs have significantly different hearts than we do?
Right?
Maybe. Maybe they do, and I just don't know much about hearts.
Yeah, and I mean, something like that, I don't know. I mean, I guess, again, that they would probably look at bird hearts and think, oh, well, the bird heart works like this, so maybe dinosaur hearts did, so maybe bird hearts work the same as people hearts. I don't know.
Who knows? Michaela, I do know one thing, and that it's time to do the dudes.
These are the dudes. Dudes are here. It's the dudes. This is what we're calling the featured creature segment now. Yeah.
Michaela, what dude do you have for us today?
I have brought us the coolest of dudes, Dreadnoughtus.
Dreadnoughtus shrani, a longboy sauropod from the early Cretaceous of Argentina. Discovered by Kenneth Lacovara in 2005, this was an absolutely huge dinosaur, measuring around 26 meters long and probably between 30 to 49 tons.
Oh, we're going to talk about how big it was.
Dread is just an English word, which is roughly synonymous with fear, and not is a somewhat antiquated English term, meaning nothing, as in Lacovara's words, it's time the herbivores get their due for being the toughest creatures in an environment. So he called it fears nothing, basically. The specific name honors Adam Schran, a financial supporter of the project.
Man, I'm really mad about this specific name. It's got this cool name, Dreadnoughtus, and then you look at the second name and you're like, Shrani? Yeah, and like, it's not a great name. I understand that this man like gave them money and stuff. Good. But just, it's so cool, and then it's not. Okay, I mean, I think we're going to start off talking about the controversy over how big this actually was. So
how in 2014, heavy is it?
Yeah, in 2014, when the paper was published being like, Dreadnoughtus, here it is! That paper says that it weighed 60 tons. Which is,
wow.
Which is like 8.5 elephants is more than a 737 airplane.
What?
It's a lot. So people didn't like this. Immediately, everyone was like, no, it's just too much. And so, yeah, so for the paper, the method that they used to calculate size was that method where you look at like the humerus and the femur and you say, okay, based on this, let's scale up. And then we get this number that is 60 tons, which is like a lot. It's a lot. So then using other like more volumetric models, multiple people have done other calculations. And yes, more like 30 tons. I saw some as small as like 20 tons. I mean, we're saying small, but it's still, 30 tons is still like 4.25 elephants. You know, it's still a lot of elephants. So it's still very big, but 60 is crazy. It's crazy.
I like that the Wikipedia article on this has like a bunch of sourced things like, oh, this duo or this paper says this weight range and they do it through this. And then in like 2018, Kevin Padian comes along and gives us this like 31 ton figure. And then the final sentence is just like, a 2020 study said 49 tons. And I'm like, why? What? That's so much bigger. That's like twice. It's almost twice what the other estimates are. How do you just present that without comment?
Yeah, just no context. And then later on, the Wikipedia article like uses that mass as the like estimated weight. And you're like,
well, it's the most recent one, Michaela.
What? That's why I hated that. I love
the sheer audacity of the original paper being like, let's take this model and let's apply it to something that is several orders of magnitude larger than the maximum weight range that this model has ever been verified with. And let's just present that as fact.
Yeah. And so, okay, so I read an article written, so there were a lot of articles written, like, you know, when this paper came out, it's very exciting, you know, the paper comes out and it's a peer-reviewed article, presumably, that is saying 60 tons. And everyone's like, oh, 60 tons. That's very big. So there were a lot of news articles written about it. One of which that I mean, I didn't read the whole thing. I did skim it. But it is an interview with the author of the paper, with Kenneth LaCuevara. So, I mean, he's pumped about how big this thing is. And I don't blame him. I really don't. But in it, he is quoted as saying that it weighed as much as a dozen African elephants, which is even more than 8.5 African elephants. I mean,
an elephant is not an SI unit for a reason.
No, and he then also said it was 65 tons.
What? No, Kenneth, calm down.
And claimed that there is skeletal evidence that it was not yet fully grown. So he's implying that it could be more than 65 tons.
What? Kenneth, get this man away from the microphone. Oh, so excitable, this man.
Oh, right. So there are many articles like this that are saying it was the biggest thing ever. It's so big. And then I found an article that basically has the opposite headline. Dreadnoughtus was probably not the biggest dinosaur ever, is what this article is called, which is clearly an article that is in response to all these other articles. And yeah, I mean, it's good, I think, that someone was like, whoa, let's take a quick break here and maybe talk about how big this thing actually could have been, or, you know, what kind of assumptions we're making with this number. Anyways, seems like it caused quite a stir in 2014.
I mean, it's hard to say what the largest dinosaur is, right?
And yes, like
what the biggest sauropod is so fraught. And there's like one Barosaurus vertebrae where it's like, wow, if this scaled to the rest of the Barosaurus that we have, which are like 10 meters long, if this is really one of their vertebrae and it's accurate, that thing would have been like 100 meters long. And you're like, okay, yeah, but... Maybe it's not.
So this article also interviewed our friend Ken, and in it he is quoted as saying, "Thus we feel we have taken the most conservative and reliable approach."
What a guy.
He was all in on this, I'm telling you.
Dreadnoughtus, at least we have, like, we have for a large sauropod, a relatively complete selection.
Yeah.
Because, like, we don't have the head, because you never get the head, right? And, like, we don't have bits of the tail. But, like, we have a pretty good idea of how long it was. I don't think anyone's like, oh, it was actually 50 meters long.
No, people are like, yeah, it was 26. About
25.
Yeah, and I think I read something like... we found like a hip bone of Dreadnoughtus, which is something that we didn't really have for a sauropod this big before. So that's very exciting. And I mean, this is very exciting. This was an extremely large sauropod. And I don't want to take that away from Dreadnoughtus. I just feel like we need to understand that it was not 60 tons.
Yes.
Its neck and head were like half of the length, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like its tail looks kind of stubby to me in terms of just how big the rest of it is. Because its tail
it's not really like balancing with its tail, right?
No, no.
Like Diplodocus has a super long tail, but that's like very strange diplodocoid thing. Because this guy, it's more like a crane. And like we don't expect a crane to have a tail. We just expect it to have a counterweight. And that's like where the body comes in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, its body was, it seems like, pretty thick. Like it was a sturdy body, because that's what you're going to need if your neck is that long. But it sort of had like a wide stance and had this sort of like broad chested appearance. Our buddy Ken compared its gait to that of an imperial walker.
yes, good. A Star Wars AT-AT. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So, what a nerd. I love him so much.
Yeah, and they did find two partial skeletons, which is cool, because it's always nice to find more than one.
Right? Like, and it's not just a single vertebrae. We've got two actual animals.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the drawing's a bit, you know, beside humans. It's wild how big it is. It's like two stories
so
tall.
It's so insane. It's so crazy how big it is. Just like 25, 26 meters? That's 13 of me.
Like, it's like 6 meters high at the shoulder.
At the shoulder?
The shoulder. And like, you know, the shoulder is really not, it's, yeah, that's not its defining feature, you know?
No. It just unfathomable, like, talking about it in abstract terms to really picture how big these things were.
Absolutely so, I mean, crazy. If I'm a theropod, do I want to try to take a bite of this? No, absolutely not. Unless I'm also a
it
very
lays so
big...
many eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
It lays so many eggs, just eat one of those.
Just eat an egg, yeah. But, I mean, again, whenever we have these really big sauropods, just, like, the amount of plant matter it would have to consume to maintain this size, I just don't know. It's just constantly eating, right?
It boggles the mind. Yeah. Absolutely. Blows me away. Yep.
It walks to a spot where there's lots of plants and it just stands there for as long as possible. Because you don't want to move. Moving is expensive.
You just absolutely denude the forest around you. And then when you've covered the entire like 180 degree arc in front of you, you move a little bit. Yeah.
Exactly. There is pop culture because, I mean, it made such a splash that, of course, people were excited by it. So it's in several Jurassic Park games, of which there are many. Oh, yeah. It is on an episode of Dinosaur Train. And in true Michaela fashion, I have found another dinosaur show I had not before heard of.
Goodness.
How can there be so many? So there is a dinosaur that is based on Dreadnoughtus. And I say based on because it is in the Netflix original series Dino Trucks, which are dinosaurs and are also trucks. So there is a Dread Truck that is based on Dreadnoughtus. I'm going to read you the plot of Dino Trucks.
Before we get to that, I can only imagine Kenneth is so thrilled that there is a Dino Truck based on his species.
Right? Yeah.
Hit me with the plot summary.
A prehistoric world, which is set in the Mechazoic era.
Okay, I love it. Yeah, no, I'm on board. I'm fully invested.
It's populated by hybrid reptile tools called Reptools, which include hybrid dinosaur construction vehicles called Dino Trucks. Two best friends, Ty Rux, who is a good Tyrannosaurus Rux, and Revit, who is a Rotilian Reptool, must team up with other inhabitants of the world to defend their community and their work from an evil T-Trux named D-Strux. Dino Trux and the other Reptools share a symbiotic relationship with one another. Ty provides Revit with safety, shelter, and security, and in turn, Revit fixes and maintains Ty when needed. That's
so
what
happens.
So this
is just laser-focused, targeted at 4-year-old boys?
And, like, think of the toys,
oh,
right?
Oh, man. This merchandising opportunities.
This is the thing. Sometimes I'll see things like this, and I think, this is just to sell toys, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Transformers was just to sell toys, and that's done hugely well.
Now, I will say that this is based on a book series, the Dino Trucks book series.
I mean, still made to sell toys, I feel
absolutely.
Like. like book selling books was a secondary concern there.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So yeah, there's like five seasons of this on Netflix. The first three are Dino what? Trucks. And then there's two more that's Dino Trucks Supercharged, which is there's like 50 something episodes. Yeah.
What?
And it has like the first season or the first series, I guess, has like a 6.8 on IMDb. And then the other one has like a 7.3. Not terrible. Wow. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Dino Trucks.
Michaela, is Dreadnoughtus a good name?
So I think I made myself pretty clear earlier that I was hyped about the first name and like really angry about Shran-I.
As you should be, yeah.
Yeah.
It is such a cool name.
It's a cool
fears
name.
Fears nothing.
Yeah. And I mean, if it was 60 tons, it would fear nothing. So.
If it was 30 tons, it would fear nothing.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
It doesn't matter. There's no point in getting bigger than that.
No.
It's just show-offish. Michaela, what sort of voice would Dreadnoughtus have? Some sort of truck voice, no doubt.
Some sort of truck voice. I don't even know what that means. So my plan here, so my first thought, let's take you through my thought process. My first thought was, oh, it's so big. It's got a deep, spooky voice. I fear nothing. But then I thought, no, we've done that, you know? And then I was like, what's in my wheelhouse? What haven't I used? And then I'm like, who else doesn't fear nothing? 13-year-old girls, because they think they know everything. And so Dreadnoughtus is there. And he's like, oh my God, you guys, these plants are like so good. Like, can you believe how good these plants are? But like, leave that one for me. Cause like, you know, that's my favorite, like that, right? Oh my God, like that's totally my favorite kind of plant, and if you eat it, I think we can't be friends anymore.
It's been a while since you busted that voice out. Like, I think I'd forgotten how much I dislike it. I like it a lot in a way where I really, really strongly dislike it.
Delightful. What dude have you brought?
Sorry, I need to recover from that. I have brought us Shippionix.
Shippionix samniticus, a small chompy boy theropod from the early Cretaceous in Italy, represented by only a single known fossil. Giovanni Todesco, an amateur paleontologist, found the fossil in 1981, and it was eventually described by Cristiano del Sasso and Marco Signore. The fossil is of a hatchling, only a few days old, so it's hard to say how large the animal would have grown up to be. When it was fossilized, it was about 46 centimeters long and would have weighed only a few grams. Scipio is a Latin name which refers to both Scipione Braislac, an 18th century geologist, and Scipio Africanus, a Roman consul. Onyx comes from Greek, which means claw, giving Scipio's claw. The specific name refers to Samnium, the Latin name of the region where the fossil was found.
It's That's so quite Italian, the name. This fossil.
Yeah.
It is.
Lots going on.
Incredibly Italian. Yeah. And I'm there for it. It's good. Michaela, this is an itty bitty cutie patootie of a dinosaur. It's
very small. Yeah. Little baby.
It was initially discovered by this amateur paleontologist, Giovanni Todesco. And he thought he had just found a bird fossil.
Okay.
And I think the tail was damaged. He at some point tried to add a tail onto the fossil. And all of the pictures I've seen of it have had this taken off and replaced with a blank slate. Which is probably wise.
Mm-hmm.
So this, as it said in the description, was like a few days old when it died, which is both sad and also makes it real tricky to say what this was.
Like at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like there's a 2011 study that found 8 unique traits that distinguish it from its relatives. Yeah, but maybe also it could be a hatchling Carcharodontosaur, which is a much larger theropod, you know, because they all start out pretty small.
They do.
And then they can get really big. So
yep.
Maybe this was like a Compsognathus type relative that wouldn't have grown up too much larger than its diminutive stature suggests. But maybe it would have grown up to be really, really big. And like, because babies look very different from adults. So when the 2011 study finds these unique traits that distinguish it from relatives, I'm kind of like, yeah, like it's a baby, right?
Yeah.
Like I haven't read this study. I don't know whether they're comparing the same age. Ontogenetic? Yeah. Ontogeny. That's what I'm looking for. The same ontogenetic growth stages. So, like, are they comparing hatchling to hatchling? Because we don't have a ton of hatchlings.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, actually, is, yeah, what are they comparing this to? Because if it's not another hatchling, then it's hard to say much of anything, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm coming down on this and saying, like, maybe it was a small dinosaur. Maybe it was a small dinosaur that would have grown up to be a big dinosaur. It's hard to say. There is a ton of soft tissue preserved in this, including bits of the trachea, the windpipe, as well as parts of its digestive tract, and even evidence of what it ate. And actually, this is really fun. Because it was only a couple days old, it may include fossilized evidence of everything that it ate.
Oh, yeah. It may.
Right? Because, like, we've got actually a bunch of stuff. There's some lizards and some fish. The fish were likely scavenged from shore after they had, like, washed up after dying. but we have multiple different lizards and a couple different fish that are preserved in the intestines. And, like, I don't know how much a baby dinosaur is eaten, but that seems, like, about right for a couple days old. So... Yeah. Yeah. The fact that traces of organs were preserved is interesting for looking at how it breathed. And this was discovered a while ago, like in 1981. It was named after a good long while hanging out in like private collection, but I think it was still described formally in the 90s. And it shows, or seems to show, this sort of arrangement of internal organs that wouldn't allow for a bird-like breathing apparatus. It doesn't have organs in the right place to make it seem like there would be air sacs. It seems like it's arranged so that there would be like a diaphragm and maybe this crocodilian-style pump breathing system. And like evidence like this doesn't go away just because we find ways for dinosaurs gastralia to be used like modern birds' ribs. And I was kind of like, oh, why, like, how did this get disregarded? And what it seems to be is preservational bias is what's suspected for causing it to look different than it may have in life. So, like, we see where the liver was, but maybe that sort of, like, gooified and spread out a little bit as it was being preserved. So it's not actually in the right place fully compared to what it would have been like in life. Because it does seem difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, for something that's so small, like, it's something being a little bit off makes a big difference.
And a little bit spread out, right? Because we've got this just like this splotch that has been scanned and it looks like it was liver because it's high in like iron content and other stuff. But yeah, if that's a bit more spread out than it was in life, then that maybe means that it could have had these air sacs, these bird-like air sacs, and that could have been, it still could have breathed like a modern-day bird, which we're kind of crossing our fingers at this point for. I feel like we're not supposed to root for things in science, but it's what it feels like, certainly.
Yeah.
But yeah. For a while, it was really causing questions about like, oh, maybe this invalidates... the bird-like breathing system that we thought was there. And then that raises all sorts of other questions, right? Like, why is this only in birds? How did birds specifically get this? And even closely related theropods missed out on it. What the heck is happening there? Although birds do have specialized ribs and stuff. Like, clearly something did happen bird-wise as they started flying that meant their lungs are different in some way or their ribs are different in some way. But overall, very cute little creature. Surprisingly unclear what it is, given how well preserved the fossil is. Because, like, we're missing the tail, but that's most of what we're missing. Like, we've got these nice sheaths that are preserved on all the finger claws, so you can see where the bone was versus the keratinous sheath over them. And yeah, just because it's so young, it's really hard to say what it actually was.
Yeah.
I found nothing for pop culture. I actually went looking pop culture-wise, and I'm actually kind of surprised because it feels like it would fit in well with like a dinosaur train, like a little Shippionix shows up, right? And is all cute and young and stuff. Nothing.
People love baby things, right? Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Anyway, I like the name. I've traditionally pronounced the name Scipio rather than Shippio, but I believe the more proper Italian pronunciation is Shippio. Seems like a good name, though. It's... I guess claw doesn't really come into it too much, although we do have like the sheaths on the claws, so maybe that's where it's from.
Yeah, it's definitely very Italian. And you
it's
know,
very Italian, yeah.
That's fun.
It is fun. And as for a voice, I mean, it's just a little guy. Cheep, cheep, cheep. Because he would be cheeping, you know?
It would!
We don't have the same
so
like
cute.
Larynx, but like, yeah, they're still cheeping around.
Yeah.
And that is it for my dude, my featured creature this week. And that is it for the pod. Michaela, thank you so much for joining me on this 2-year dinosaur adventure.
The dino journey concludes.
It's been a time.
We've been hit by our own meteor. I don't know.
A metaphorical space rock, yeah. Yeah. That's how we want to wrap this up, sure.
Yeah.
I don't think there's too much else to say other than
hasta la vista.